Egzamin maturalny z języka angielskiego. Poziom rozszerzony. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie teksty do zadań od pierwszego do trzeciego. Przed wysłuchaniem każdego tekstu usłyszysz dźwięk. W nagraniu przewidziane są przerwy na zapoznanie się z poleceniami oraz treścią zadań sygnalizowane dźwiękiem. Rozwiązuj poszczególne zadania w trakcie słuchania nagrań oraz w czasie przerw po ich wysłuchaniu. Zadanie pierwsze. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
One. Hi, I'm calling to tell you about some holiday arrangements I tried to make. Earlier this week, I logged onto the Holiday Home website to rent a room. It works like this. People advertise spare rooms, and potential guests contact them through the site to arrange the details. I booked a room, or so I thought. Back bounced an email saying I was rejected because the site requires users to verify their online identity. It turned out you need at least 150 Facebook friends. I only have 50. I know that you've got a large audience, and I wonder if anybody else has had a similar problem. I may not have a fully developed online identity, but that doesn't mean I'm not real. Can you talk about the problem on air? I think it's important.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
1. Hi, I'm calling to tell you about some holiday arrangements I tried to make. Earlier this week, I logged onto the Holiday Home website to rent a room. It works like this. People advertise spare rooms, and potential guests contact them through the site to arrange the details. I booked a room, or so I thought. Back bounced an email saying I was rejected because the site requires users to verify their online identity. It turned out you need at least 150 Facebook friends. I only have 50. I know that you've got a large audience, and I wonder if anybody else has had a similar problem. I may not have a fully developed online identity, but that doesn't mean I'm not real. Can you talk about the problem on air? I think it's important. Two. Is it true that Irish consumers are eating fewer and fewer potatoes?
Well, new figures have revealed this trend, and they confirm that it's because of an increasing taste for rice and pasta dishes. Sales of potatoes have decreased by more than 8% during the past year. Caroline Evans, the president of the Potato Council, says retailers should take urgent steps to stop this drop and take a new approach to advertising. She believes that when consumers are shown more options for potato-based products, sales will go up. According to data from World Panel, 90% of consumers who were buying fewer potatoes didn't realise they'd reduced their consumption.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
2. Is it true that Irish consumers are eating fewer and fewer potatoes?
Well, new figures have revealed this trend, and they confirm that it's because of an increasing taste for rice and pasta dishes. Sales of potatoes have decreased by more than 8% during the past year. Caroline Evans, the president of the Potato Council, says retailers should take urgent steps to stop this drop and take a new approach to advertising. She believes that when consumers are shown more options for potato-based products, sales will go up. According to data from World Panel, 90% of consumers who were buying fewer potatoes didn't realise they'd reduced their consumption.
3.
And now something about license agreements. You know, they're those walls of text you have to click under to install any software on your computer. Hardly anyone bothers to read these monotonous lines of terms and conditions. What a mistake! To prove this, one software company included a clause in its license agreement that promised a financial bonus to anyone who read it. All they had to do was send a note to an email address given there. 4 months and 3,000 downloads later, one person finally wrote in and got a check for $1,000, proving that it really does pay to read the license agreements. So let's start reading them. You never know what's inside.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
3.
And now something about license agreements. You know, they're those walls of text you have to click under to install any software on your computer. Hardly anyone bothers to read these monotonous lines of terms and conditions. What a mistake! To prove this, one software company included a clause in its license agreement that promised a financial bonus to anyone who read it. All they had to do was send a note to an email address given there. 4 months and 3,000 downloads later, one person finally wrote in and got a check for $1,000, proving that it really does pay to read the license agreements. So let's start reading them. You never know what's inside.
Zadanie drugie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Speaker 1.
Every year we celebrate Earth Day at my school. This time, though, instead of going out to plant trees or pick up litter, we stayed in and had a visitor from the local authorities. He asked everyone to put down their environmental pledges for the next month on the whiteboard. Most of us declared that we would make small changes like, I won't let water run while I brush my teeth, or I will turn off the lights when I leave a room. Now they are all on the wall of our classroom. Once a week, everyone ticks the promises that they have managed to keep. I think it's a great way of motivating yourself to stick to what you have pledged. Why don't you try it?
Speaker 2. I was shocked when I read the statistics in a local government bulletin showing that in my town there are thousands of dripping taps that people don't bother to fix. I made some calculations, and the next day after school, I went around my neighbourhood asking people to check their kitchen and bathroom taps. Many of them were indeed leaking. In order to motivate their owners to replace the faulty taps immediately, I provided them with my figures, showing how much they could cut their bills annually by stopping water from dripping down the drain. Judging by their reactions, my campaign met with general approval and will bring results soon. Speaker 3.
Last summer, my friend and I worked as assistants at a day camp for little children. Once we took our group on a hike to see an abandoned mining site. I'd never been there before, and when we got to the place, I got scared. I saw an ecological bomb, a big pool of dirty, greasy water with a rusty lamppost sticking out of it. I called the district council the same day. It turned out that they had no idea that the place existed. I sent them a few pictures asking for immediate action. They answered that they needed to find $1,000 to test the water for dangerous chemicals, but promised to fence the pool off straight away.
Speaker 4. I'm a member of an ecology club, and I've always been active in recycling. I'm angry that people keep getting new plastic bags instead of reusing the ones they already have at home. So I came up with a project that we carried out last Saturday. We stood outside a supermarket, and before customers went in, we talked to them about the environmental threats caused by plastic bags. The following week, we learned from the shop manager that even though they recorded a higher than average turnover on Saturday, the number of plastic bags handed to customers in fact dropped by 35%. As you can see, it takes very little to raise people's awareness and encourage them to make choices that are better for the environment.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Speaker 1.
Every year we celebrate Earth Day at my school. This time, though, instead of going out to plant trees or pick up litter, we stayed in and had a visitor from the local authorities. He asked everyone to put down their environmental pledges for the next month on the whiteboard. Most of us declared that we would make small changes like, I won't let water run while I brush my teeth, or I will turn off the lights when I leave a room. Now they are all on the wall of our classroom. Once a week, everyone ticks the promises that they have managed to keep. I think it's a great way of motivating yourself to stick to what you have pledged. Why don't you try it?
Speaker 2. I was shocked when I read the statistics in a local government bulletin showing that in my town there are thousands of dripping taps that people don't bother to fix. I made some calculations, and the next day after school, I went around my neighbourhood asking people to check their kitchen and bathroom taps. Many of them were indeed leaking. In order to motivate their owners to replace the faulty taps immediately, I provided them with my figures, showing how much they could cut their bills annually by stopping water from dripping down the drain. Judging by their reactions, my campaign met with general approval and will bring results soon. Speaker 3.
Last summer, my friend and I worked as assistants at a day camp for little children. Once we took our group on a hike to see an abandoned mining site. I'd never been there before, and when we got to the place, I got scared. I saw an ecological bomb, a big pool of dirty, greasy water with a rusty lamppost sticking out of it. I called the district council the same day. It turned out that they had no idea that the place existed. I sent them a few pictures asking for immediate action. They answered that they needed to find $1,000 to test the water for dangerous chemicals, but promised to fence the pool off straight away.
Speaker 4. I'm a member of an ecology club, and I've always been active in recycling. I'm angry that people keep getting new plastic bags instead of reusing the ones they already have at home. So I came up with a project that we carried out last Saturday. We stood outside a supermarket, and before customers went in, we talked to them about the environmental threats caused by plastic bags. The following week, we learned from the shop manager that even though they recorded a higher than average turnover on Saturday, the number of plastic bags handed to customers in fact dropped by 35%. As you can see, It takes very little to raise people's awareness and encourage them to make choices that are better for the environment.
Zadanie trzecie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Today we're talking to one of the architects involved in designing the High Line, an extremely popular park in New York. James, what makes the park unique?
The main difference from the other parks in New York is that it is an elevated structure which you can reach using steps, platforms and elevators. With its unexpected twists and turns, it looks very much like a ribbon that winds among high-rise buildings, stretching for more than a mile. The park was created on a former railroad track, which went out of use in 1982, and over the years fell into neglect and became overgrown with weeds and bushes. Many people wanted it demolished, but changing this elevated railroad into a park turned out to be a much better idea in the long run. Now the extraordinary design attracts crowds of visitors who stroll along and watch the busy life of New York from up there.
How did the idea of transforming this neglected space into a park originate?
Well, when the railroad track fell into ruin, there were plans to pull it down and make room for new offices and residential buildings. But in 1999, two local people, Joshua David and Robert Hammond, came up with an idea for revitalizing the area. They set up the Friends of the High Line organization and started to campaign for the creation of the park. Many people living in this neighborhood joined in. What followed was a series of disputes and negotiations with skeptical property owners and the city authorities. Friends of the High Line also gained the support of many celebrities who signed their petition. The organization managed to raise funds, and finally in 2006, the decision was taken by the city mayor.
What were the most important aspects for architects to consider while working on this ambitious project?
There were lots of them. Preserving a slightly old-fashioned quality in an ever-evolving and modernizing city was a challenge we couldn't miss. Obviously, we wanted to give visitors the feeling that they have come across a unique place, a kind of a magic garden. But our primary goal was to ensure safety. We wanted every detail, from the paths and benches to lighting and water features, to make people feel secure and comfortable in this place. Another important task was choosing plants that can survive in this difficult environment. We have very thin soil, which gets very hot in summer and freezing cold in winter. That's why we needed to use very hardy and resistant plants and find ways to supply a sufficient amount of water and nutrients to them.
The plants have been brought from the prairie or other difficult environments, and hopefully they'll survive.
Is there something you're particularly proud of?
There are several things. One of the greatest features is the paving, which has open joints, so when it rains, the water falls through them and is collected, stored, and then absorbed into the flower beds. We can demonstrate that about 85% of all the water that falls on the high line stays on the high line. We also hope that with all this greenery, there will be some carbon reduction. There's certainly a cooling effect with the shade the plants provide. All the materials are recyclable or come from sustainable sources. Overall, I think it's a very eco-friendly design.
Well, thanks a lot, James.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Today we're talking to one of the architects involved in designing the High Line, an extremely popular park in New York. James, what makes the park unique?
The main difference from the other parks in New York is that it is an elevated structure which you can reach using steps, platforms and elevators. With its unexpected twists and turns, it looks very much like a ribbon that winds among high-rise buildings, stretching for more than a mile. The park was created on a former railroad track, which went out of use in 1982, and over the years fell into neglect and became overgrown with weeds and bushes. Many people wanted it demolished, but changing this elevated railroad into a park turned out to be a much better idea in the long run. Now the extraordinary design attracts crowds of visitors who stroll along and watch the busy life of New York from up there.
How did the idea of transforming this neglected space into a park originate?
Well, when the railroad track fell into ruin, there were plans to pull it down and make room for new offices and residential buildings. But in 1999, two local people, Joshua David and Robert Hammond, came up with an idea for revitalizing the area. They set up the Friends of the High Line organization and started to campaign for the creation of the park. Many people living in this neighborhood joined in. What followed was a series of disputes and negotiations with skeptical property owners and the city authorities. Friends of the High Line also gained the support of many celebrities who signed their petition. The organization managed to raise funds, and finally in 2006, the decision was taken by the city mayor.
What were the most important aspects for architects to consider while working on this ambitious project?
There were lots of them. Preserving a slightly old-fashioned quality in an ever-evolving and modernizing city was a challenge we couldn't miss. Obviously, we wanted to give visitors the feeling that they have come across a unique place, a kind of a magic garden. But our primary goal was to ensure safety. We wanted every detail, from the paths and benches to lighting and water features, to make people feel secure and comfortable in this place. Another important task was choosing plants that can survive in this difficult environment. We have very thin soil, which gets very hot in summer and freezing cold in winter. That's why we needed to use very hardy and resistant plants and find ways to supply a sufficient amount of water and nutrients to them. The plants have been brought from the prairie or other difficult environments, and hopefully they'll survive.
Is there something you're particularly proud of?
There are several things. One of the greatest features is the paving, which has open joints, so when it rains, the water falls through them and is collected, stored, and then absorbed into the flower beds. We can demonstrate that about 85% of all the water that falls on the High Line stays on the High Line. We also hope that with all this greenery, there will be some carbon reduction. There's certainly a cooling effect with the shade the plants provide. All the materials are recyclable or come from sustainable sources. Overall, I think it's a very eco-friendly design.
Well, thanks a lot, James.
Czas przeznaczony na tę część egzaminu minął.